You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our passage today comes from the book of Job, part of what's called the wisdom literature of the Bible. And for Job, the slice of wisdom that is being wrestled with is what's called theodicy, which is the technical term for trying to make sense of a good God allowing evil and human suffering. Now, this is a question that is as old as humanity, which makes sense then that it's at the heart of what most scholars agree is the oldest book in the Bible. Our text today is part of a longer conversation between Job and a group of less than helpful friends trying to comfort him in his sufferings. And right before our passage today, Zophar spends a whole chapter explaining why Job has got to be guilty of something that deserves this punishment. And Job's response is basically, "Yep, I'm a laughingstock. I've tried to live with integrity and compassion, and look, I'm worse off than robbers or those who provoke God. I just don't get it. But one thing I do know is that the life of every living thing is in the hand of the Creator. Don't believe me? Ask around." So let's check out the exasperated words of the anything but patient Job.
Our words of wisdom is from the book of Job, chapter 12, verses 7 through 10. "But ask the animals and they will teach you, the birds of the air and they will tell you. Ask the plants of the earth and they will teach you, and the fish of the sea will declare to you. Who among all of these does not know the hand of the Lord has done this? In God's hand is the very life of every living thing and the breath of every human being." Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
Back in February of 1990, the Voyager 1 space probe had completed its primary mission and was about to leave our solar system. At the request of astronomer Carl Sagan, NASA commanded Voyager to turn its camera around and take one last photograph of Earth from 3.7 billion miles away. In the photograph, Earth appears as a pale blue dot against the vastness of space, the whole planet captured in less than a pixel. Later, Sagan wrote, "Look again at that dot. That's here. That's home. That's us. On it, everyone you love, everyone you know, everyone you ever heard of, every human being who ever was, lived out their lives. The aggregate of our joy and suffering, thousands of confident religions, ideologies, and economic doctrines, every hunter and forager, every hero and coward, every creator and destroyer of civilization, every king and peasant, every young couple in love, every mother and father, hopeful child, inventor and explorer, every teacher of morals, every corrupt politician, every superstar, every supreme leader, every saint and sinner in the history of our species lived there, on a mote of dust, suspended in a sunbeam." Inspired by some of the first photographs of the Earth from space, poet Archibald MacLeish wrote, "To see the Earth as it truly is, small and blue and beautiful in that eternal silence where it floats, is to see ourselves as riders on the Earth together, brothers on that bright loveliness in the eternal cold, brothers who know now they are truly brothers." On an Earth Day when we riders on this pale blue dot are shaken by a reminder of our fragility as a species, it's worth a moment to reflect on some of the ways people of faith can respond. I think now more than ever, it's important to remember Jesus saying, "Inasmuch as you have done it to the least of these, you've done it unto me." Because even before our current pandemic, more than 5 million mostly poor children have been dying every year from diseases related to the environment: asthma, dysentery, cholera, malaria, and more. And all that suffering is exacerbated by poverty, by war-generated refugee crises, and increasingly by the disruption of global climate. Rising temperatures lead to the spread of disease-carrying mosquitoes, warming waters, drinking water fouled by floods, runoff from heavy rains or hurricanes, all bring bacteria that in the belly of a poor, malnourished baby doesn't mean just diarrhea, but death. And who can grasp the impact the pandemic will have, not just in impoverished countries, but in our own inner cities, where crowded apartments make social distancing impossible, or where the economic downturn puts more and more families out on the streets. As we think about all the ways that our lives have been disrupted and altered, I think Jesus would want us to keep in mind those least of these who he advocated for with such passion, and not just in response to this current crisis, but in a broader reevaluation of the ways we've chosen to order our society for the long haul. In an Easter letter published last Sunday, Pope Francis wrote, "I hope that this time of danger will free us from operating on automatic pilot, shake our sleepy consciences, and allow a humanist and ecological conversion that puts an end to the idolatry of money and places human life and dignity at the center. Our civilization, so competitive, so individualistic, with its frenetic rhythms of production and consumption, its extravagant luxuries, its disproportionate profits for just a few, needs to downshift, take stock, and renew itself." Wow, that's right. The Pope calling for a humanist and ecological conversion. Is your sleepy conscience shaken yet? And what Francis is only hinting at here is that our civilization, downshifted, renewed, or not, is dependent on the overall well-being of our larger household, the environment. And we haven't received a lot of gold stars for taking seriously our responsibility as good stewards of late. It's not like creation itself isn't sounding the alarm, most of which we haven't been paying attention to. As Catholic theologian Thomas Berry puts it, we're only talking to ourselves. We're not talking to the rivers. We're not listening to the wind and the climate. Most of the disasters that are happening now are a consequence of that failure to communicate. If we're going to have much of a future, we need to expand the conversation. We need to break out of our habit of making everything about human beings alone and start thinking about the rest of creation. We need to stop thinking about God as some supernatural being external to creation and start thinking like the founder of the Jesuit order, Ignatius, who encourages us to see God in all things and all things in God. If we can do that, then we can do what Job suggests and ask the animals, and they will teach you, the birds of the air, and they will tell you, ask the plants of the earth, and they will teach you, and the fish of the sea will declare to you. We can do what Thomas Berry suggests and listen to the rivers, the wind, and the climate, and all will declare that every living thing and the breath of every human being is in the hands of that mystery of creation that we really can't grasp, but see manifested in the beauty of this fragile, precious, pale blue dot we call the earth. Just look at the Bible. Right off the bat, the poetry of Genesis expresses the deep relationship that humans have with the earth, with the Hebrew words for humanity and ground being Ha-Adam and Adama. If this pandemic has done nothing else, it's reminded us of how fragile we are as a species, how interconnected we are with one another and with all of creation. The more we can foster our awareness of that interconnectedness, that interdependence, the deeper our connection can be with the planet we call home, and the least of these that Jesus calls us to be in solidarity with. The more we can echo the humility that Carl Sagan proclaims in reflecting on our mote of dust suspended in a sunbeam, the more likely we are to internalize the profound and unique gift our planet is. The more we try to grasp the vastness of the expanse of time that has culminated in this moment, the more likely we are to be inclined to not drop the ball and honor and care for the environment for the benefit of generations to come. As Sister Mary Southard puts it, how important it is that we learn the sacred story of our evolutionary universe, just as we have learned our cultural, religious stories. Each day, we will begin to do what humans do best. Be amazed, be filled with reverence, contemplate, fall in love, be entranced by the wonder of the universe, the uniqueness of each being, the beauty of creation, its new revelation each day, and the divine presence within all. Done right, Earth Day is not just a one-off nod to the natural world. It's a moment to renew one's commitment to making a difference every day. As Jane Goodall says, you cannot get through a single day without having an impact on the world around you. What you do makes a difference, and you have to decide what kind of difference you want to make. That means making a difference in the economic and social systems that we live in, too. Not just to ensure our own well-being, but to ensure the long-term sustainability of the whole of creation. The more we humbly embrace our place in the universe and the amazing gift of the planet we call home, the more we acknowledge the interconnectedness that we have with one another and with all living things, the more we seek to practice tikkun olam, or the healing of the earth, the closer we get to living into the vision that Jesus set before us. Ask the animals, and they'll teach you. The birds of the air, and they'll tell you. Ask the plants of the earth, and they'll teach you. And the fish of the sea will declare to you. Listen to the rivers, the wind, and the climate. All will declare that every living thing and the breath of every human being is in the hands of that mystery of creation that we can't just grasp, but is manifested in the beauty, diversity, and exuberance of life on this fragile, precious, pale blue dot we call Earth. Happy Earth Day, and be well.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.